want this talk to be like pretty informal. Basically, I just kind of want to give you like enough context for this paper of Telemann's that like that you know you can, I guess, sort of read it. And sort of the goal of his paper is to try and make sense of the following thing. He wanted to know, like, what is an action of a group G on a Fakaya category? But it turned out that that problem is extremely difficult. But there's sort of an ansatz that one can use, where one can try and look at I'll call them A-type G actions on categories. So the reason that I'll say A-type is because the Fakaya category is related to the A model. And these things, either depending on your taste, either are exactly, or a subset of, or exactly equal to boundary conditions for A-twisted three dn equals four pure G gauge theory. And although like we don't understand these things very well, there's a certain physical equivalence called 3D mirror symmetry. And that should relate boundary conditions for A twisted 3D n equals 4 G gauge theory with boundary conditions for B twisted 3D n equals 4 sigma model. With target roughly T star of the Langlands dual group complexified and then modded out by the adjoint action. And this had been described already by Kapustin, Zansky, and Selina. And it was expected that these things are supposed to be some kind of holomorphic Lagrangians inside of this space here. Let me call this BFM of G, because this is the notation that Telemann uses for it. Equipped with, so these things are holomorphic Lagrangians, in particular, they're algebraic varieties. And so it makes sense to talk about a coherent sheaf of categories. And this is, and you know, if you know anything about like the state of the Fakaya category and the state of algebraic geometry, this side is like much more well-defined than this side. And so what Telemann wanted to do is try and use like this ansatz or use this 3D mirror symmetry to try and like test like what a good definition of like an A-type action, G action on a category should be by doing computations over here.
What does the effect stand for?
Bezwar, Kovnikov, Finkelberg, Merkovich. So basically
it's
before...
So
basically there was a paper before BFN where they swapped out Mirkovich for Nakajima.
Just the homology of the affine Grossmannian without any extra.
Yeah.
Wasn't
Oh yeah, and Bezwar Kovnikov for Braverman. So yeah, so basically, so the only person who stayed fixed was Finkelberg.
Yes.
The F is fixed. Yeah, you're right. Okay, so what we want to try and do is explain like what this dictionary is, but let me just say one property that one expects, and that's that this dictionary should be compatible with mirror symmetry in a very strong way, like ordinary 2D mirror symmetry. And in fact, if you only understand like this compatibility, you can actually get like quite far on guessing like how things ought to work. But the compatibility with 2D mirror symmetry ought to be, so if I'm in my 3D A model, and I have some sort of category with, or I have some sort of a boundary condition. Let me actually say, before I say this, let me say that they're in both of these cases, there are objects. I don't want to say this. So there are some special objects. There are some special boundary conditions. That exist in any gauge theory. And these are Dirichlet and Neumann. So in terms of this dictionary, Dirichlet is just, so Neumann is the trivial action of G on the category of vector spaces. In Dirichlet, this one's a little bit harder to describe, but I'll talk about it later.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
So, like, in the cotangent case, if I think of like D modules or constructible sheaves on the base as a model for the pi category.
Yeah.
Then, so should I be thinking like A type G actions means like strong?
Well, I'm going to do all that later. So let me just.
The answer is yes.
Yeah. The answer is yes. But yeah. Right now, I'm not making any mathematical statements. I'm just trying to like make a few easy physical statements. And the property that these objects have is that if I have some boundary condition, so another kind of you should think of these boundary conditions physically as being a twisted. Sorry, I'm just trying to get like my whole dictionary on the board. 2D equals 2-2 theories with a G symmetry. So I'm replacing this category, or this category is supposed to be the category of boundary conditions for this theory. And so in particular, if I have some sort of a 2D theory with a G action, the important property of these guys, Dirichlet and Neumann, is that if I make a sandwich where on one side of the sandwich I put Dirichlet and on the other side I put an E2D theory with a G action, I should just get, and then I take the radius, or sorry, take the length of this interval to go to zero and get an effective 2D theory. This one should give me my theory back. And if you have Neumann, and I take G acting on 2D, then and collapse this whole picture, then this thing should give me the gauged theory. Yes, let's call this thing B. And if I do 3D mirror symmetry to this picture, I should get some kind of boundary condition, which for right now I'll just call D shriek. We'll identify it later. And some other boundary condition, B shriek. And you could do the same exact. And here in the middle, I had my 3DA model. And here in the middle, I have my 3DB model. And when you reduce this, you get something. And the relationship between these, that these things should be 2D mirror. So I'll just call this thing like the tensor product or something. Or maybe I'll call it the Hom. Although really there should be some kind of a dual here. So in particular, if you do the sandwich constructions, it reduces to 2D mirror symmetry. I guess this is true with an arbitrary set of boundary conditions, not just Dirichlet and Neumann. But what we'll be especially interested in identifying the mirror to Dirichlet and the mirror to Neumann, because they have this nice property. Okay, but the point is that by looking at whatever it means physically to do this sandwich construction, like one should get a whole bunch of mirror symmetry statements, and you can try and test whether you understand your 3D, whatever you're proposing in 3D, by looking at various sandwiches that you can build and checking that the results are things that are known to be mirror to one another. Does that make sense? And that's basically the way that we're going to try and like do everything. Okay. So anyway, I hope this was very vague, but I hope that this was a little bit helpful. Okay.
And concretely, checking will be checking.
So when I give a definition, when we give like a proposed definition, this collection of boundary conditions is supposed to form some kind of a two category. I mean, similar, this one should also form some kind of a two category. And basically, the different Hom spaces in that two category will be either A models if you're on this side, or they will be B models if you're on this side. And so you can check whether two objects are matched under 3D mirror symmetry, or like conjecturally, by like one test that one could do is you could try and compute your putative mirrors, compute the Homs between them. That will be some kind of a B model representing some 2D theory. Here, you could compute the Homs on the other side. That will be some sort of an A model. And you could ask, are these two things 2D mirror to one another? The answer is yes. Well, then that gives you, you know, some consistency check. And of course, if you could vary, you could hold one fixed and vary over every single boundary condition here, then you would know it for real. But the point is that the way that you can sort of check whether you're doing things correctly is by trying to use this picture and then checking whether you're getting mirror symmetry statements that are known. Okay, so let me try and explain to you what this what Telemann's proposal is for these A-type G actions on categories. And then depending on how far we get, I'll either also try and describe this KRS category or we'll do it next time. Okay. So I want to try and talk about A-type actions on categories. So it turns out that these will come in two flavors. The first flavor, well, the easier flavor to understand is the Durham. And the second flavor is the Betty. And I'll explain like what gives rise to these two different flavors. For the purposes of this talk, since we're going to be interested in Fakaya categories, the ones that we're really going to be interested in are the Betty. But I think it's like worth it to sort of do both of them, because these Durham actions do come up in other settings. And depending on precisely how you try and make the physics rigorous, like you could get either one, you just sort of have to be very careful. And the possible definitions of these two things is there's one definition that's very easy, but like completely useless. So this first one is that you could think of this as sheaves of categories on the space. So this is like more of a dream definition, although I think this one actually is real, thanks to the work of Gates-Gorey and collaborators. So you can think of it as sheaves of categories on BG equipped with a flat connection. And so like if you are an expert, this is the same thing as a sheaf of categories on the space BG Durham. I'll explain a little bit more about what exactly BG Durham is in a minute. The contrasting definition with these Betty things is that these things are supposed to be sheaves of categories on BG equipped with an integral connection, or an integrable connection. I also sort of expect that this thing ought to be roughly the same as what's called a sheaf on G Betty. Of course, if you're in like a flexible enough situation, then you can solve the differential equations posed by any flat connection. And so these things would coincide, but in algebraic geometry, they don't always. So this is like one possible definition of both of these things. But this definition is basically useless. But if you're a really fancy person, then possibly you might already know what this means and you can tune out. There's a more useful notion. So let's suppose that G acts on C in a differentiable way, or in a smooth way. So this, if you're an algebraic geometer, is just saying that you have a sheaf of categories on BG. You can differentiate the action. And this will give you a map of Lie algebras from the Lie algebra of G into the endomorphisms of the identity functor of your category. So basically, all I need this like smoothness for is I need for it to make sense to take the derivative of a transformation, so that I can like define like what the infinitesimal ones are. And you can ask that this thing be trivializable. So what I mean by that is there's the zero Lie algebra. There's a natural map of Lie algebras here. There's a natural. This is some Lie algebra map. And one can ask, and there's a canonical inclusion here, and one can ask that there be a homotopy equivalence between these things, or natural transformations. Or sorry, what am I doing? Tensor categories? These are. This is a tensor category. Or wait, sorry. This is a vector. Sorry, no. Sorry. This is the identity functor. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. ID of C. Sorry. So I have this identity functor. So this is the space of natural transformations from that functor to itself. And one can ask that you have some sort of an equivalence here. Of course, you have to do it in a homotopy coherent way. There's a better way of saying it. So by choosing a fatter model, for the Lie algebra zero. So for example, you could write the Lie algebra zero as the Lie algebra G sitting in degree zero, and the Lie algebra G sitting in degree minus one. Wait, don't want to do that. And then just have a differential given by like the identity. So you can build a Lie algebra like this. Then you can just ask for a strict factorization. G including into this fatter model. And then, you can ask for just a fatter extension. And then this data will actually, and then you can ask for this to commute strictly on the nose. And then this basically will hold the data of this homotopy.
Are you assuming G is compact or something?
Am I assuming G is compact?
Yeah, that's
the one acyclic. Yeah, this Lie algebra on the bottom should be acyclic. And so like if I extend, so I have this natural inclusion here. So this is just a different model for this zero Lie algebra. And if I do a strict triangle like this, it's the same.
Is that the map is a covariation?
Yeah. Sorry, but what are you trying to ask me? Why did you think I needed compact?
Oh, aren't you like using the adjoint as projective as a module?
I don't think so. No, I'm just using that the identity map is certainly a... Okay, yeah, I don't think I'm using anything. Here. Okay, so this is like pretty weird, but let me try and actually like do... I'll try and do this in a slightly lower dimensional setting in a second. So the Durham version of this, or sorry, the Betty version of the same thing is that inside you can choose a neighborhood U of the identity sitting inside of G. And ask for a trivialization of the U action.
In what topology?
The smooth topology. Okay. Yeah, not like Zariski. Okay, so, and the difference between these things is that, like, if you can trivialize the Lie algebra action, then certainly you can do it in an infinitesimal neighborhood of the identity. But the question is like, can you actually integrate that to like a small, like actual neighborhood? There's a better way of actually saying this, where you can use the path space of G. So look at the space of all paths starting at 1 from G, and then you have the evaluation map at the other endpoint of your path, at the end of your path, that maps you onto G. And you know, you could have some sort of an action like this. So you have some sort of map of groups. And then one can also ask that this thing be trivializable. Sorry. So this is the data. So again, I'm starting with this smooth action, and then now I'm just can ask for the induced P1G action to be trivial. So the way that you would get this from that is you would sort of patch together. If you could trivialize in a neighborhood, then you can patch, like just patch things together along any path. And you can get a trivialization of this induced action. So this will turn out to be easier. Okay, but this probably didn't make any sense. So let's actually go and examine this case, and I'll show you, and let's actually do this one category level down, when I could try and ask for like, what is a Durham action of a group on a vector space? And once we understand like what that is, then hopefully like this will become more clear. Reattach this thing. Well, whatever. It's a model for a point, right? Because so these are all the paths in my. So this is the space of subspace of the space of maps from the interval to G, such that they all start. That they all start at the point 1 in the group. And of course, you can just contract any of those paths to the constant path that just stays at 1 forever.
You're resolving the inclusion of the identity by applying fibrin.
This is a fibrin replacement for the inclusion of 1 into G. Yeah.
And I should somehow think like a neighborhood as opposed to the actual point are the same thing. Because here you were saying, oh, I want to trivialize on a neighborhood, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, these things are supposed to be equivalent to one another. It's just that there's no topological obstruction, because this is simply, it doesn't have any topology, there'll be no obstruction from sort of using this trivialization to along like any path. Okay, but I'm not going to talk about this one for a minute. Let me do this one first, and then we'll go back and do that one. Okay, yeah, so in both cases, okay, so let's do this in the case I have a vector space. So, and actually, let me give an example, like in lower dimensions, rather than like say what it means in general, let's just like do a very particular example of the kind of time that this thing comes up. So here's a lower categorical dimension. So let's say that I have some vector space, or that I have some action of G on some manifold X. then you get an action of the Lie algebra of G acts on the space of Durham forms of X by the Lie derivative. So in particular, another way of writing this, which will be a little slightly more convenient for what I'm about to do, is you have your space of endomorphisms of the Durham complex. And you know, as a DG vector space, and this thing itself is a DG vector space, and this action is just given by some Lie algebra map, given by X maps to the Lie derivative of X. Now, there's a natural, anyway, so now we have our natural inclusion of this thing into this two-term Lie algebra, which of course is contractible.
X became M.
X became what?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I have too many X's in my life. Yeah, I was using X for vector field and X for, let me call these V, I guess, just let me. Okay. But then there's this Cartan magic formula. Which tells you that the commutator of D with the insertion of V is the same thing as the Lie derivative with respect to V. So this thing tells you, well, if I want to extend this Lie algebra action, so this top part must go via the Lie derivative. And one can try and ask, or try and extend this by asking this bottom part to go via the insertion. Then when one works out like what is the Lie bracket on the space of endomorphisms, it's just commutator with the Lie bracket on the vector space that I'm taking endomorphisms of. And so this Cartan's magic formula is exactly what telling me that this is a chain, map of chain complexes. So any time that you have an action of a group on a manifold, the action on the Durham complex is naturally like of a type. So, okay, but this is a sort of a dimension of like lower categorical dimension. An example of like higher of like actually the categorical dimension that we're interested in is if G is acting on X, then I claim that there is a strong action of G on the space of D modules on X. Okay, but we're not gonna do a lot with the strong actions, but I feel like these are a little bit easier to explain, so I wanted to do, sorry, these Durham actions. But I feel like they're a little bit easier to explain. But yeah, so this Durham flavor, like everything is like pretty much all, just everything is summed up in just this little Lie algebra here.
What did you say, D of X is?
D modules. Yeah.
That's sort of one category.
Yeah, and this is actually the kind of thing that like I'm that I would be interested in. Okay. And I should say this action comes up in the definition of like equivariant cohomology. So like if you try and take invariance of such a Lie algebra of this Lie algebra action. Then like it'll spit out like the Cartan model for like the equivariant cohomology. And similarly, we'll see, we'll work out kind of later that if you try and take invariance with this strong action, it gives you equivariant D modules, G equivariant D modules on X. Okay, but again, like these DeRAM actions are not really the ones that we want to do. The real one that we want to mess with are these. Okay, so let's try and examine like what sort of a structure I can get out of this thing. So one thing that you can notice is the kernel of this evaluation map is just the loop space of G. So now, if I have any point in the Lie algebra of G, it's going to determine for me an automorphism, and it's going to be trivial in two reasons. So the first reason is that by the evaluation map, it's going to just map to the one here. And then because this is a homomorphism, one must go to the identity. So this composition, anything in this composition, like must be the identity. But it also has to be an identity for the second reason, because we've trivialized the action of this this group of paths. So in particular, we can compose these two different trivializations. And what we get is a map. So what we get is a map from loops on G into the automorphisms of the identity functor. In particular, this thing, I'm going to assume that all my categories are like actually linear. And so in particular, this thing has to factorize through the chains on the loop space. I'm just linearizing. It's just like if you have like a map of G into automorphisms of some vector space, you can extend it to something from the group algebra. And this is just the homotopical way of doing that. So you can see that one of these things gives like another way that you can encode this action, or something you can get out of this action, is you'll get some sort of a map from chains on the loop space of G into the endomorphisms of the identity functor. So taking the difference, this comes from taking the difference of the two trivializations. Okay, so this is like pretty important, so maybe I'll stop for a second.
Could you say as what type of objects those are maps?
This is a DG vector space. That's a DG vector space. These are supposed to, so let's actually, we'll work out that in just one second.
Can you even start with just a pop lock?
This one would be a space. Yes, so like basically it depends on like specifically how you're modeling your infinity categories. So if you model like this as being like a simplicial set, then this is just another simplicial set, and this is, at the very least, it's a map of simplicial sets. But these things both have a composition, so it's actually a map a priori just of where the composition of loops has to go to the composition of automorphisms. But I'm just saying that because, but also like if my category was linear, then there's also another model of this where I could have known that the endomorphisms like actually would have formed, would have been the simplicial set corresponding to a chain complex. So I could think of this as being a chain complex, and then I would have to convert this simplicial set into a chain complex, which you do by taking the chains.
So that chain complex is Hochschild cochains?
So when I say endomorphisms here, I mean, the Hochschild cochains. Yeah, so I say, whenever I say anything, I always mean in the most, in the most derived way. So I mean these endomorphisms, which of course is just the Hochschild cochains. And so when I write HH, I'm going to always mean chains, so I'm just going to do that.
So you're going to always mean chains or cochains?
Or cochains, sorry. I always mean cochains. Okay, so if I'm linear, then I can linearize this space. And it'll be okay. Okay, but a priori, but actually, in fact, this thing is going to be.
Can you say one physic word or two?
Sorry?
Can we try to say a few physic words about this?
About.
So the right hand side, this H8 is local operators or states. I forget.
This? Yeah, this is.
Local
operators. Local operators. Yeah. And. This thing is going to end up being almost the 3D local operators, except for it's actually only going to be like a Lagrangian and functions on a, yeah, some of the 3D local operators. I think it's
local operators on the normal matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Dirichlet. Or well. Yeah, so I mean, I'll go into more into that later. I'm just now just trying to give but that's the idea. Let me give some more ways of thinking about this same thing, because this is like kind of like the most important construction. And this, oh, actually, let me say one other thing. So one thing that you can see is that this thing actually had to be composition compatible with the composition of loops, but it also needed to be like compatible with this group multiplication. Because like it's coming from, or like this thing has a group multiplication and might trivialize. And so like this thing's actually compatible with two different multiplications on this space. And so in fact, this is actually a map of like E2 algebras. Right, because this thing has two different products, one from composition of loops, one from multiplication in the group. This one has two different products, one from horizontal composition of natural transformations and one from vertical composition of natural transformations. And this must respect them both. So this is a map of E2 algebras. Maybe I'll draw a picture of that. So this, yeah, so just to be clear, so this endomorphisms of the identity functor has two multiplications. The first one is if I have two natural transformations, you can, between the identity functor and itself, you can compose them in the vertical way. But also, if I have two of them, oh, okay. But then the other way that you can compose them is like this. So if you have two different natural transformations, let's call them alpha and beta, so you can either compose them vertically or you can compose them horizontally, and, right? Because this is just the composition is 1 to the c. Here's the identity. This composition is the identity. So there's two different compositions here. And I'm claiming that the two different compositions, this space also has two different compositions. One is coming from composition of loops, and the other one's coming from the group multiplication. And I think this one is corresponds to the loop composition. And I think this one gets sent to the group composition. Yeah, sure, they're the same, but not up to homotopy, they're the same. So yeah, a priori, these two, you have these two monoidal structures. Yeah, and so they combine into the structure of an E2 algebra.
I have a confusion about whatever is it. So chains on the base loop space looks to me like you take the 3D theory with Dirichlet boundary conditions on both sides.
Yeah.
And your field is like,
that would be 1G, right?
That would be 1G, right?
Is that...
You said P1G looks like...
No, P1G is just paths.
P1G looks like a
slab.
Yeah. Oh, you're saying that this looks like maps from Dirichlet.
G chains on G looks like a slab to me.
Is that close, like this omega G?
Yeah, but I'm trying to figure out where omega G comes from. Like, why?
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Oh, you mean, yeah. I mean, another way that you can see where this omega G comes from is another way that you could try and model this action is you could just think of G as being a topological space.
Yes.
then you can think of your category C like it's an infinity category. So let's just forget all of the invertible morphisms. Non-invertible morphisms. So now it's just a space. And now you can just ask for a map of spaces, like an action would be a sufficiently nice map of spaces. In particular, it needs to send.
Space C tilde to G.
Oh, sorry. I mean the endomorphisms of C. Sorry, I mean into the space of endomorphisms.
But it's the base loop space, right? It's a loop to start and end of the identity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'll just wait.
That's what you say. It was a free loop space, I'd be much happier.
Well, no, because it's not the gate symmetry is broken at the boundary, right?
Yes.
So I don't know, I think.
It's still super closely related to the Affine Grassmanni.
Thanks.
Like omega G is.
Yeah, this thing is Grassmanni. Sure.
Yes, what you said is correct.
Yeah, it's just the non-equivariant cohomology of Grassmanni, or non-equivariant homology of Grassmanni.
Right. So.
Well, it could. Yeah.
So it's like if I take the RAM stack of the Affine Grassmanni, and so as you said, it's derivationally bounded conditions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so this GMG should be there for the same reason as you get toughest of the models. So.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But right. Maybe the spore version.
Yeah, and like the hardest part of this is like making sense of like what the equivariant parameters are doing. Like already you can see that this is giving you some sort of a. Let me actually just spell out some more things.
So omega g is kind of the phase space, and chains on omega g is the state
quantization. Yeah. Like omega g to RAM, or like per g to RAM, like the phase space.
Right. So doing 1.1. Sorry. But that's supposedly quantum mechanics on the omega g.
So, since it's kind of Kähler, to commit to,
right? Makes sense. Then map.
The map is, if I have a slab with usually a one end and one end coupled together,
mm-hmm.
Then the operators on the slab are just the theory I've put on the other side.
Okay.
But it gets a map from the Dirichlet operators.
Okay.
So it turns out that that as long as your group is simply connected, this map is enough data to remember everything. As long as your group is connected, this is enough information to remember everything. So from now on, our definition of what a Betty A-type action will be is just going to be an E2 map from chains on the loop space into the Hochschild homology of our category C. So after all of this nonsense, this is going to be the definition we're going to use for what an action is.
Could I ask, is there like an HH upper versus lower identification?
So usually, if your field theory was like Calabi-Yau or something, you would have it.
We don't want that.
Yeah, you could do it. I mean, in this case, I'm like, it would be unnatural to put the lower.
Wouldn't?
Right.
One of the two states on the circle, the other is local operators.
Well, it depends on the spin on the framing.
Framing of this, yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
This is like states with the framing which extends across a disk. The other one is the states with the, different framing.
I see, and you're saying we want, you were just giving a physical argument for why that there should be a map as such, and it should be two local operators.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. That wasn't an issue logical, right? HH with local.
Yeah.
So in particular, if you have such a thing, then your C will sheafify over the spectrum.
Question: is there a notion of center somehow where you say the center of an issue algebra comes from the theory is trivial, but the center of this C omega?
Yeah, there's a notion of center of a E2 algebra.
Right.
it's an E3 algebra.
Yeah, and so the center ought to be the full BFM space.
Yes.
So like this thing is just the whole, I mean, that's some cryptic remark in Telemann's thing, but yeah. Okay, so in particular though, like what it means for like a category to be, you know, linear over some ring, or sorry, if you have like an affine scheme, a sheaf of categories over that space is just the same thing as a category that's just linear over the corresponding ring. And this is just saying that your category is linear over this ring. So in particular, like we've shown or we've proved that if I have a, mathematically, what we've shown is that if I have a category with a Betty G action, then it is linear over the space. And it turns out that the spectrum.
Justin, stop using that word.
Okay, I'll just get off.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, so now to make contact with like
the board on the far left end, there isn't a podium in front of it.
Okay. Yeah, so now to make contact with what we did over there.
Yes, it is the definition of sheaf categories.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if your space is just affine, then like it, then all you need to do is just give a map from that ring into the Hochschild homology, and yeah. So this is tautology. Like, so this bit was hard, but this statement is just a tautology. So if you don't know what a sheaf of categories is, it's literally this.
So there's no grading on that ring, or you don't care about it, or?
There's a grading on that ring.
Spec and not proj, or?
Sorry?
Why is it spec and not proj?
Oh, yeah, I don't want to take it. No, I don't want to do that. Yeah, it has a grading, but I don't care. I don't want to think of it as a C star action.
Okay.
Well, or maybe I might later.
I don't care about it in this context.
Not in this context.
Could you remind me of the statement on the category lower? So the statement that a sheaf on a space.
Sure, just a sheaf on a space is just a module.
A module for the algebra. Okay.
Yeah, which is the same thing as a map from the ring into the endomorphisms of the vector space.
Yes.
The underlying vector space for that module. So this is just like one higher level up. Yeah, right, because this is just the endomorphisms, right, of. Okay. So but now we can make contact. We've actually now proven this statement, modulo this theorem of BFM. So the BFM space is, by definition, the spectrum of the equivariant homology of the loop space. And then sitting inside of that is this space that we've constructed. So if you set all the equivariant parameters to zero, then it cuts out something, and that's this space that we've seen here, and this is a Lagrangian that we usually call like the core of the BFN space. So this is a theorem of BFM, which I won't prove, but just take this as the definition of that space. And when you think of this ring, when you think of its, the ring structure is coming from the composition of loops.
They should be the bulk operators, boundary operators.
Yeah. Okay, so we've actually shown something, like pretty close. So I have a holomorphic Lagrangian inside my BFM space, which is this core, and then I have a sheaf of categories on it. And the hard part of this is, we haven't really tried to make very much sense of like what this stuff is. Let me now try and like give you like a big source of examples of categories with these actions. So let's suppose that G. This whole time I've been thinking of G as being a compact group. So now, suppose that G acts Hamiltonianly on a symplectic variety, or sorry, symplectic manifold. And when I say symplectic manifold, I mean a real symplectic manifold, not holomorphic like I sometimes do. So this is actually equivalent to an action of the symplectic groupoid T star G on M.
Is X the same as M?
Sorry. X, all X's and M's are the same for the rest of the talk. And the important part of the definition of an action of a symplectic groupoid is that the action is actually a Lagrangian correspondence between T star G cross X and X. So like to give an action, there's a particular Lagrangian correspondence you write down. I can actually write it down. So the correspondence that you write down is you look at all the pairs of points G mu x, so this is a point in the cotangent bundle, x, gx. This is the Lagrangian correspondence that gives you the action. So that where mu is the moment map for the g action. So the important thing about these symplectic groupoids is that the action is actually given by a Lagrangian correspondence, and the multiplication on the groupoid is like actually also given by Lagrangian correspondences. So this is something that's a pretty well-known equivalence, although if you want to read more about this, there's a paper of Pascaleff, which is pretty useful.
Why is this a groupoid?
Because it has basically the projection onto, so when I say it's a groupoid, I want to use the projection, I want to trivialize the, let's say I trivialize this thing using like the, or yeah, so I have like two different maps to G-dual, which are the two different ways of trivializing, one of them corresponds to like left invariant covectors, the other one's right invariant covectors. And so this is like the source and target maps for my groupoid. And then it has a natural composition coming from the multiplication. So the base of the groupoid, the objects in the groupoid are G-dual. And then this is supposed to be the space of morphisms.
Where did you say to read more about this?
I'm gonna write it. So give me 1 second, and then I'll write down the reference. So assuming the functoriality of the Fakaya category under Lagrangian correspondences, so this is the place where things become very non-rigorous. But there's basically some work by Woodward and Catherine Beierheim, that did it. So assuming like this functoriality, the fact that the multiplication on my groupoid is given by Lagrangian correspondences, that tells me that the wrapped Fakaya category of T star G is monoidal. And this monoidal category actually acts on the wrapped Fakaya category of M. So yeah, to see more about this, although it's not really due to him, but he wrote a good explanation of it recently. There's a paper by Pascaleff on like Poisson something and symplectic groupoids. I hope this is enough keywords.
It's not enough Fs in Pascaleff.
Huh?
It's two Fs.
Two Fs.
At least.
At least.
Just two. Don't overcompensate.
Yeah. So yeah, this is a good paper. He explicitly, like, he gives like a good, nice explanation of what exactly a symplectic groupoid is, how this works. He reminds you what functoriality of Fakaya category under Lagrangian correspondence means, and he proves the statement. The other thing that he does is he shows you how to prove these things using the sheaf models, like at least in the case that this thing is a cotangent bundle. There's sheaf models for the wrap Fakaya category, and he shows you how you would prove these statements, like in those models. So that's...
Could I just ask, should I think of this as analogous, like in the Durham setting, to like D modules on...
Yes, yeah, so in the Durham setting...
This would be like some Gleyber conditions again.
No, this is if I had a Fakaya category, which I'm thinking of, and I have a G action on it, and I'm going to think of it as a boundary.
It's a fork graph of this G.
Yeah.
Not on top. No, this one must be the lines.
This is from Dirichlet to Dirichlet, yeah.
Right. And,
No, it's not the lines, it's just...
Yeah, it's lines from Dirichlet, because lines from Dirichlet are the same as boundary conditions for a slab.
Oh, yeah.
Slab is a sigma model of this
G. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of it because it's Dirichlet, so you can compose.
No.
Yeah, like if you have like, I don't know. So what are you saying?
I think it's just lines from Dirichlet.
You're saying the same thing. You're saying boundary conditions for Dirichlet slab.
Yeah.
Which Davide pointed out is the same if you just rotate it.
Yeah.
And this is monoid.
Okay. Yeah.
I see, because boundary condition for a slab between boundary.
Well, if it's the same,
right?
Yeah.
It's always lines on the...
Yeah.
But it would be non-natural composition the way you were...
Yeah, because you have to use the serre to, like, turn it around. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that's right.
And obviously, these lines act on the boundary condition for this lab between the Dirichlet and something else.
Yes.
Which is also for kind of the theory.
Yeah. So if you want to, so the in the Durham setting, what you get is D of G acting on D of X, where these are D modules again. So that's what the Durham version of this stuff is. Okay. So now let me just say that the unit for this structure is actually given by the cotangent fiber of the identity. I claim that this is actually the unit.
Because if the boundary conditions are joined smoothly, there is no holonomy from one to the other.
Yeah. And then there's a theorem due to Abu Zayed, which tells you that in fact you can identify this whole category with just endomorphisms of the unit. And in particular, the endomorphisms of the unit end up being chains on the base loop space. That's, okay, so this whole category is really just the same thing as chains on this base loop space. Let me say something else. Anytime you have a monoidal category, so this is an M acting on some other category C, and then you have the unit in M, then there's always a map from the endomorphisms of the unit into the Hochschild cohomology of C. And so from this setup, what I'm going to get, so I've told you that the endomorphisms of the unit are really just chains on the base loop space. So what I'm getting is a A-type Betty action of G on the wrap Fakaya category. So this is like the key example. Okay, so how am I doing over time?
So Fakaya of X is always sheaf category over
Yeah, so Fakaya of X is always a sheaf category over this space. Maybe let's actually just go to an example. And how much time do I have? What time is it?
It's like 2:36.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's actually just go ahead and do.
What WAP means in Fakaya FM?
Sorry?
At some point, I would love to understand what WAP means in all of this discussion.
So that's the part that I don't understand either, and that's the part that I was trying to set this whole thing up to learn about, is because when we start looking at other 3DA models, like I think that there's like multiple places where there might be wrapping, and like understanding where all those wrappings are, like that's exactly what I don't understand.
Okay.
And so that's...
So what's the data that you need to give a wrapping?
So you need to give, well, like some kind of.
Is there a unique graph for Kaya of a manifold?
No. So there's a bunch of different ways that you can do it. So like I think the most modern is that you can give like a Lagrangian skeleton.
Okay.
And that like determines like a sufficiently nice Lagrangian skeleton determines wrapping. I think the original.
What's this stuff, G? There will be.
I think G, yeah. For T star anything, it's just.
Okay.
But there's another, but you can do other skeleta to get things. So like this category. I'll say one word about this.
It's like doing like a Liouville vector field or something. And
that determines a skeleton for you.
Also.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but if you wanna, but yeah, I mean, there are lots of ways of specifying the data, but the what we've shown, so like one thing that's true is that if you take like the wrapped Fakaya category of a cotangent bundle, you use the trivial, like the obvious Lagrangian skeleton just being M, then this thing ends up being equivalent to a certain category of constructible sheaves on M. With singular support on M. So the singular support is like a certain subvariety of the cotangent bundle. But one could also look at various wrapped Fakaya categories.
But are the conditions made out of dot of M and multiple copies of M?
Yeah, although the main generator for this they're supposed to be transverse to the skeleton.
I see.
Because the generator here is actually this guy.
Mostly fibers. Okay.
Yes, it's mostly fibers. But
the anamorphisms of the fiber is chains on the space.
Yes.
Yeah. But in general, like what if you pick different kinds of wrapping, there's supposed to be some sort of a theorem where you get like constructible sheaves with like fixed micro support. But like this is kind. I think that this is now pretty well proven, but for a while like this wasn't clear. Okay, so let's go ahead and now examine the case when G is equal to U1, or is equal to.
So can I talk about this sub M thing here? So that means singular support
on the zero section. So that means, so this is the same thing as, so if a sheaf has no singular support on the zero section, then that means that it's just a local system.
Yeah, right. But then you made this other comment about the fibers. I was confused by
that. I'm saying that when you try and represent a local system by a certain Lagrangian, like it's the fibers, it's the thing, it's the like the way that you represent things by Lagrangians is by using Lagrangians that are like transverse to the Lagrangian. Right, because the like one object that I said was in here when I'm using G as my skeleton is the cotangent fiber. And that thing, like if you think about like the geometric property this has, it like intersects that skeleton in a maximally transverse way. Right, like cotangent fibers are exactly the perpendicular Lagrangians.
So M is not in the category.
Yeah, M is not in the category.
But not really.
It is.
So I'm confused because what do you call, how could it possibly log M?
Okay. Yeah. So the anamorphism of M is the cohomology of M. So the category includes both base and fiber. The anamorphism of M is the cohomology. The anamorphism of the fiber is the base of its space.
Oh, sorry, but yeah, everything that's in this wrap Pacaya category. Yeah, so maybe it's a little bit, it's not quite that clear. But
like there's I forget the words, there's an allotment of local systems where you can include things which look like the fiber.
Or maybe it's at the generators of the things that are like transverse to the skeleton. Maybe that's the right thing to say. Like M doesn't M doesn't generate the category.
I mean the category of local systems is equivalent to chains in the base loop space.
Yeah.
Modules of chains in base
Yeah. So maybe it's not that like it's not in there, it's that the generators of the categories are the things transverse to the skeleton.
Like the fibers are like the perfect modules and the base are like the finite dimension modules.
Yeah. Okay, so let's do this guy. So this becomes a very clear statement. So what this thing is supposed to be telling you is that, one mathematical way that you can look at this is you can look at sheaves of categories on B of the topological type of U1. So this actually like has a definition like in like derived geometry. And I claim but this thing is supposed to be an analog of these A type topological categories. And there's another category, which is sheaves of categories on C star. Let's do this. So the loop space of U1 is, of course, the integers. So then the spectrum of chains on the loop space is just C star. And I claim that there is, that what we've shown is that there's actually like an isomorphism between these things. But this is a particular example of what's called like higher Cartier duality or Cartier duality. Because this thing is the same thing as b squared of the integers. And the integers and C stars are Cartier dual. And the higher Cartier duality is that for nice enough abelian group schemes, there's an equivalence between sheaves of categories on b squared of that abelian group scheme and sheaves of categories on a check where this is the space of characters.
So you're like saying something about what form which theory is interleaving the same sigma models.
Yeah.
This is just mirror symmetry, right?
Yeah, so the mirror symmetry, right?
This one is sheaves and C star.
Yes.
But if A is a discrete abelian group.
Yeah, so there are similar versions of this where you do quasi-coherent sheaves on BA are the same thing as quasi-coherent sheaves. I might have to change one to like incoherent or something, so don't yell it.
Topological theory.
So I guess this one should be dual functions on a check. So like these are like the different levels of the duality. So the original one is a duality of Hopf algebras. Then there's like this duality of categories of sheaves. So this one's mirror symmetry, ordinary mirror symmetry. Like if I did
the dual to the structure sheaf on the left-hand side should be like the skyscraper
at the origin.
Yeah.
But again, if A is a discrete finite group, like CN, it becomes a logical,
I think, like,
logical theory statement that
yes,
A gauge theory in two dimensions is equivalent to a sigma module on it as well.
Yeah. So these are kind of like the, yeah. So maybe like this is like the,
that's cool.
like a good spot to call it. So I think next time what I'll try and do is try and like look at like some other example. Maybe I'll try and explain like how one sees toric mirror symmetry this way. Right, because like if I know, because I should be able to like view do toric mirror symmetry using this example, like as Hom spaces in this example. But there's various things that are a little tricky with like B fields and stuff like that that I would like people to help me understand. And then I would maybe try and go into like the non-abelian examples. So then it should be, if I did like B3?
No, more like...
What do you mean H3?
It was a gerb or something.
If the cutter is twisted by a gerb.
Yeah.
Then there should be something else on the other side.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know the answer.
By the way, I just want to make a comment before everybody runs off. So I had scheduled... Justin for 11 next Thursday, thinking optimistically that I would find some local person to give the 1:30 talk. But I was, if anything, too optimistic about how assiduously I would try to do that. And no volunteers have materialized. So would people prefer to just move Justin's talk to 1:30?
Yeah, I don't care. I would probably prefer that. If that's a good enough reason.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I'll make sure it gets changed.
Yeah, so at the end I didn't get to like relating this to like mirror symmetry, but maybe we'll do that next time. So I've proven some mathematical fact and I claim that it should be related to, and I've shown it's related to 3D mirror symmetry, but I haven't shown it's related to ordinary mirror symmetry.
So again, G2B Z2, are there very interesting statements?
You change Z to Z2?
No, G to be Z2. So V1.
Yeah. Well, that thing's not a... I guess is that thing a... So I think that then a topological action isn't very interesting in that case. I think it's like just the same as an ordinary action. So then you're asking, is there like some good way of describing and then isn't it its own Pontryagin? Yeah, wait, so
I still give you some useful perspective on all the faults for Kaya, of all the faults and things like that.
Yeah.
Cohomology.
Yes. Z2 might act on the manifold with fixed point.
Yeah. I'm sure that there's interesting things to say. I'm not sure if I can shove it into. Can I shove it into this? Because I guess Z2 isn't naturally B of something. Or is it naturally B of something?
You take B squared of Z2, probably.
Well, B squared of Z2 then would be. That'd be different. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I could do that. But that wouldn't be the same as replacing G with Z2. That's all I'm saying. Is so it's not immediately clear to me how to shove it into that example. It is interesting just to examine like categories with a topological Z2 action. That's a cool thing to do. I'm not sure that it literally shoves in here. It would give you some other different statement about sheaves of categories on like some Eilenberg-MacLane space, and like category, and then I guess sheaves of categories over Z2. Yeah, actually, let me tell you that there's like another thing to look at. There's another reference that's very useful. So several years ago, Telemann gave a big series of lectures at UT Austin. Like he gave about 4 lectures on what eventually would be his ICM. They're called like Perspectives in Geometry or something like that. And there are slides online, like about like 60 pages of like handwritten slides, which are like much more useful than the ICM. So like that's like something, like if you want to see like a good reference, that's like a really good good reference.
He never wrote a longer paper about this stuff?
He just wrote the ICM, and then he sort of wrote a paper where he just did a mild extension of this to include matter, but in a very boring way, like not really like the way you'd really want to do it.
Thanks again.